You are Locked On Mets, your daily New York Mets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello to all you amazing Mets fans. You're listening to Locked On Mets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. To get this show every day, follow us wherever you get your podcasts. You can also tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Mets. This episode is brought to you by Locker Room. Download the app and join me on Wednesdays to get in on the action. Locker Room, changing the way we talk sports. By sweeping their doubleheader yesterday, the New York Mets won another series, beating the Colorado Rockies in a four-game set. Huge accomplishment for this ragtag group of Mets. I will talk about everything that happened in those games and what this Mets team has been doing as of late in the second segment today. But we're going to lead things off talking about Noah Syndergaard, because some big news as he has been shut down for 6 weeks due to elbow inflammation. What does that mean for the rest of his season, for the Mets season, and for his future with this team? Finally, in the third segment, I will preview the upcoming series between the Mets and the Atlanta Braves. Before we get to any of that, though, I'm your host, Ryan Finkelstein. If you want to find any of my work, follow me on Twitter, at FinkelsteinRyan. You can also follow the show at Locked On Mets, where we were doing a giveaway this week for a signed photo of Edwin Diaz. And the winner is David Hans. No, David's a longtime listener of the show. I will send you a DM, get your information, and send you that photo. All right, so let's talk about Noah Syndergaard. This is terrible news. And basically what Louis Rojas said is that he shut down for 6 weeks. That means he's not picking up a baseball. His rehab has been stopped to a grinding halt. Because he has elbow inflammation, and we'll just have to wait and see what it looks like at the end of that 6 weeks. Can he start throwing again? And if he can, he'll still have to ramp back up. And you're looking right now as the calendar's about to flip over to June, and it's not looking good for Noah Syndergaard to play a big role in this team this year. I believe the big quote from Rojas was, "We pray he can pitch for us this year." That is not a ringing endorsement. And this reminds me of Zach Wheeler in 2015. If you remember, going into spring training, this is going to be this unbelievable rotation. You have Matt Harvey coming off Tommy John, Jacob DeGrom, the reigning rookie of the year, or coming off a rookie of the year. You have the potential for Noah Syndergaard and Steven Matz to affect the rotation. You had John Neese and Bartolo Colon, and you had Zach Wheeler, who was coming off his first full season in 2014. He ends up getting Tommy John surgery during spring training, just like Noah did last year. You thought in 2016, okay, he missed his full year. We're going to see Zach back at some point, maybe around the All-Star break. That sound familiar? And what happened? Setback after setback, the Mets eventually shut him down. We don't see him again until 2017. Not to say that this is an apples-to-apples case and that's definitely going to happen, but would it be stunning for Noah to be out for the rest of this season? I don't believe it is at all. I think that is a realistic possibility at this point. Hopefully it's not, but you have to prepare for that. And really, you have to acknowledge that you have to get through this season without him at this point. And so when it comes to this current team, that means David Peterson probably in the rotation all year, right? I mean, hopefully you get Carlos Carrasco back. Luckily, Taijuan Walker will return to the rotation Friday night. We'll talk about that in the series preview. But David Peterson, who was maybe on the bubble at some point when the rotation got healthy, his spot's safe. He's got to figure it out and start pitching a little bit better. And then from there, because Carrasco is still in this murky situation where there's no guarantee when he's coming back, you got to wonder, all right, what do the Mets do? Do they stretch out Seth Lugo and go back to Lugo as a starter? Is that something they consider? Are they going to ride out what they've been doing so far with Joey Lucchese and kind of a worked-in bullpen game, because you know he can't get deep? Or do you trust Lucchese and try to stretch him out more and try to make him more of a traditional starting pitcher? that can go deeper in games. Probably not the best strategy because it seems like the later he gets into these outings, the more hittable he gets. He only has two pitches. Teams are able to adjust and square him up a lot better. I don't think that's a viable solution. So what do you do from there? Do you go to Thomas Ibuki? Try him out, see what he looks like. This is a young pitcher that maybe can have a big impact. Who knows? So the Mets have some options. You know, Jordan Yamamoto is on the 60-day IL now, but Jared Eichhoff is a pitcher in the minor leagues right now that certainly has major league experience. Would they consider bringing him up, trying him out? Who knows? But you cannot factor in Noah Syndergaard at this point. If you get anything out of him, it's a great surprise and something that could take the team over the top down the stretch. But you can't count on it. Luckily, the Mets have been getting by this year for good portions where they only had three real traditional starting pitchers, whether it be DeGrom going down for a bit, Walker going down for a bit. You know, it's basically been Stroman and Peterson as the constants, and they've had guys come up from the minor leagues and make starts, and they've had bullpen games, and it's worked. So I don't doubt that the Mets can get through the regular season without Noah or even without Carrasco if he doesn't come back. But when it comes to the playoffs, the Mets' upside was always tied to the potential of having a playoff rotation that would include Jacob deGrom, Noah Syndergaard, Marcus Stroman, Carlos Carrasco, and Taijuan Walker, with one of those guys probably coming out of the bullpen. And now you just don't know if that's going to happen. And more focused on Noah, as a fan favorite, you got to wonder what his future with the team is right now. Because you could say this is, in some regards, maybe a good, I wouldn't say good thing, but it might increase the likelihood that Noah returns to the Mets because he seems like a prime candidate now to sign that qualifying offer if the Mets extend it to him. Very similar to Marcus Stroman this past year, had an injury, didn't pitch, might have wanted to test his market, but decided to bet on himself, take the qualifying offer, and re-enter the market. Noah's even younger than Stroman, so he could make that same gamble. But at the same time, Corey Kluber got, what, $11 million from the Yankees coming off injuries? So who knows what Noah could command based on his pedigree alone. There might be a team out there that would sign him to a three-year pillow contract with an opt-out that gives him some long-term security, but also gives him a lot of money in the first year and, you know, tries to steal him from the Mets. That's certainly on the table. So it's a very interesting set of circumstances here that the Mets are going to navigate come the offseason and throughout this year as they try to decide what they do with Noah, and as Noah has to decide what he's going to do for himself, because the last thing he should be doing right now is rushing himself back and hurting himself again and really impacting the long-term success and availability that he can provide teams throughout the rest of his career. He's got to get healthy to get back to the guy that he was. And right now he's shut down and who knows when we'll see him again. So that was some really bad news that we learned on Thursday. But on the field, the Mets continue to find a way to win. Going to talk about those games and what the Mets were able to accomplish in just a minute. Lucy Nicotine is a company founded by Caltech scientists and former smokers looking for a better and cleaner nicotine alternative. Finally, tobacco alternatives that don't suck. Researched and developed for 3 years to be made for people, not patients, Lucy has created a nicotine gum with 4 milligrams of nicotine that comes in 3 flavors, wintergreen, cinnamon, and pomegranate. Lucy also has a lozenge with 4 milligrams of nicotine that comes in 3 flavors, cherry ice, citrus, and mint. It's 2021. Get rid of your cigarettes, unplug your vape, throw out your dip, and get some Lucy nicotine gum or lozenges. Locked On MLB Network listeners can go to lucy.co and use promo code LOCKEDONMLB to get 20% off all products on your first order, including gum and lozenges. That's lucy.co and use the promo code LOCKEDONMLB at checkout. Also, I have to give this disclaimer, warning: this product contains nicotine derived from tobacco. Nicotine is an addictive chemical. Lucy.co, and be sure to use that promo code LOCKEDONMLB. Investing can be complicated, but whether you're a beginner or you've been investing for years, Wealthfront makes it easy. They can create a portfolio of globally diversified low-cost index funds personalized just for you in minutes. No manual trades, no picking stocks, no watching the stock market every day. They automatically handle all the investing based on preferences you control. Wealthfront is trusted with over $20 billion of assets, and you can get your first $5,000 managed for free by going to wealthfront.com/lockedonMLB. All you need is $500 to get started. You can grow your wealth the easy way and let Wealthfront do the work for you. To get your first $5,000 managed for free for life, go to wealthfront.com/lockedonMLB. That's wealthfront.com/lockedonMLB to start growing your savings. Go to wealthfront.com/lockedonMLB and get started today. The New York Mets swept their doubleheader against the Colorado Rockies on Thursday, and once again it came down to pitching and defense. The Mets only scored 5 runs in the 2 games. They won the first game by a score of 1-0, the second game by a score of 4-2, but they won each game. They continue to win by this razor-thin margin, and it's working for them. Since Michael Conforto and Jeff McNeil went on the injured list, the Mets are 6-4. And there's been other injuries that have popped up since then as well. Pilar going down. You have just had this rash of injury after injury. You got all of these names now on this roster that you never expected to come together. And the Mets are just getting enough clutch hitting. And they're just relying on that pitching and the defense. And if you want to kind of dive in to some of the plays we saw in this doubleheader, we saw Jonathan Villar continue to play a great third base, better than anybody could have expected when he hasn't played the position much over the last couple of years in his career. But he's making strong throws. He's showing some range in with his athleticism that a third baseman like J.D. Davis just simply doesn't have. He's been awesome over there. I mean, if you look at the metrics, I'm sure he probably hasn't graded out to be this huge above average defensive third baseman, but he's given you enough. He's being solid. He's not hurting you. And Lindor is the anchor of the defense. He made another just ridiculous play on Thursday where he dove in the hole to field this ball, had a glove toss at the second. Peraza did a great job to stay on the bag and dig the throw out. And Jose also made another leaping catch on a line drive. And he also made another play to his left, ranging and fielding a sharp hit ball to make a big play to get out of an inning. We're just seeing everyone contribute. Billy McKinney, in his first, 2 games as a Met, made a handful of just really nice running catches. Cameron Maben made a nice catch. We're just seeing everyone chip in one way or another, and it's working for the Mets. And then when you're getting great pitching that is trusting your defense, it really all comes together. And that's what happens when Marcus Stroman goes on the mound. He pitches to contact. I really think he should have pitched a complete game in the first game of this doubleheader. Goes 6 innings, allows just 3 hits, walked 2, had 3 strikeouts, had, I think it was 10 ground ball outs, made a couple of really nice plays off the mound. I don't know why you would ever try to bunt off Marcus Stroman. It seems like a complete waste of an effort and an out, but the Rockies tried it, and Stroman was up to the task, flashing that gold glove once again. It's just been a joy to watch Stroman and watch the way the team can play behind him at times. They win 1-0 in that first game. Edwin Diaz gets another save. We'll talk about him at length at some point in the coming weeks because his stats in save situations, they're just breathtaking. He's been perfect in his save chances. And when it comes to his job as a closer, as much as everyone wants to knock him, he's doing what he's supposed to. Now, offensively, the Mets, they get a home run by Jose Peraza in game 1. That's all the offense they could accumulate. 3 hits overall, but it was basically just that solo homer. And then you look at the second game, right? First inning, the Mets are able to score a run. Jonathan Villar gets on base. Francisco Lindor gets a base hit. That puts runners at first and third. Billy McKinney ends up hitting into a double play, which is like a double for the current Mets offense. If you can hit into a double play with no outs or runners at first and third, and you get a run in, give him a steak dinner. Great job by McKinney just to scratch a run for the Mets. Later on in the fourth inning, Jose Peraza with the bases loaded gets a knock that scored a run. The Mets couldn't do any more than that. But in the sixth inning, they got some insurance runs, both coming on bases loaded walks. I think the Mets lead all of baseball right now in bases loaded walks. It just shows you how inept this offense is, that one of their prime functions to score is to just grind their way on base and work bases loaded walks. But you know what? It puts a run on the board. If you can't do it with your bat, do it with your eyes. And the Mets were able to put four runs on the board, which they desperately needed because Miguel Castro wasn't going to pitch in this game. Trevor May wasn't going to pitch, or I should say this day. So without May, without Castro, after burning Diaz in the first game, Luis Rojas finds a way to get through a game where Joe Lucchese started. And sure, it's a seven-inning game, but Lucchese ends up leaving in the fourth inning after getting two outs. Drew Smith comes in, gives up an inherited runner, but gets an out to get out of the fourth. Aaron Loop pitched a clean fifth. Jeurys Familia pitched a scoreless sixth. And then in the seventh, the Mets started with Robert Gsellman, you know, with a three-run lead. Gsellman gives up a run. Rojas doesn't want to keep him out there and run the risk of him giving up a home run or something. So it goes to Jacob Barnes, of all people, and Barnes picks up his second save of the season. So once again, it shows you just that team nature, all these guys contributing. And we have to give Rojas a lot of props for what he's done with this team. I think if you're talking about the coaching staff, Jeremy Hefner deserves a lot of praise as well, because he's got a lot to do with what has worked for the Mets this year, which is the pitching top to bottom. It's been amazing to see what those guys have done with this pitching staff. But Rojas has done a really nice job pushing the right buttons, keeping the entire team engaged. And you look up right now, and the Mets are the only team in this division that has a winning record. They have a 2.5 game lead over the Braves, a 2.5 game lead over the Phillies. They are becoming this juggernaut at Citi Field. They're 14-5 at home. That's the best winning percentage in baseball at home at 736. They've done a great job, and luckily, they remain home over the weekend and will once again face their division rivals, the Atlanta Braves. I'm going to preview that series in just a minute. Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar ever, with 18 amazing flavors to choose from, like the caramel brownie bar, cookies and cream, which is my personal favorite. You have the cherry barcia, lemon almond cheesecake, carrot cake, and the apple almond crisp. These really are protein bars that taste like candy bars. They come covered in 100% chocolate. They're soft, they're easy to chew, and they're healthy. Built Bars come low in calorie, low in sugar, but they are high in protein and high in fiber. If you want to try Built Bar today, go to BuiltBar.com, use the promo code LOCK15 to get 15% off your next order. That's promo code LOCK15 to get 15% off at BuiltBar.com. The Atlanta Braves are coming into this series against the Mets with a 24-25 record. They are 5-5 in their last 10 games. They have yet to have a winning record this entire season. Now, they just split a two-game set against Boston. They had a day off heading into this series on Thursday, and they are red hot offensively. That is something that will be very interesting to see this Braves team with all their firepower going up against the Mets and their pitching. Marcell Ozuna will not be a factor in this series. He's on the injured list with some fractured fingers. He's going to miss at least 6 weeks. But Austin Riley has been scorching hot over his last 15 days, and he did some damage against the Mets. He has 7 home runs and 4 doubles. He's hitting .370 with a .434 on base percentage and a .913 slugging percentage. Essentially, Austin Riley over the last 2 weeks has probably produced more offense than this entire Mets team. Now, I'm probably exaggerating, but I don't know if I really am. I didn't take the time to crunch the numbers. I'm just thinking now, maybe. I mean, 7 home runs, surely he has hit more home runs than the Mets have over that span. Just crazy what he's doing. This is a young player who is finally coming into his own for Atlanta. Not a good sign for the Mets. They got to try to keep him at bay. Maybe he's due to cool off, and maybe that happens this weekend. Along with Riley, another young player that is coming into his own is William Contreras, the brother of Wilson Contreras from the Cubs. He has an OPS over 1,000 over that same span in the last 15 days. Dansby Swanson also has started to turn a corner, a 974 OPS during that span. You have Freddie Freeman, Ronald Acuna Jr., and Ozzie Albies that continue to be steady contributors at the plate. This is a team in the Braves that has scored 47 runs in the six games since they last played the Mets. They did have a 20-run game against the Pirates. That is really inflating that stat with the 47 runs, but it's just a ridiculous amount of offense. Can you imagine if the Mets scored 20 runs in a game this weekend? Like, seriously, try to picture how that could happen with this current roster. I would bet my life savings that that would not happen. I would bet my future earnings that that would not happen. I just can't imagine the Mets scoring 20 runs. They might not do that with a full lineup, a full healthy roster with Conforto and Jeff McNeil and Pete Alonso. I just don't see Brandon Drury and Billy McKinney and Cameron Maben putting up 20 runs or even putting up, 15 runs throughout the entire series. So we'll see what happens. That's definitely the big storyline. Can the Mets pitching combat the Braves offense? Now, this year, the Braves actually have a better run differential than the Mets, and they've scored almost 100 more runs. So that just shows you that the Mets have found a way to win those tight games, and they have just done some spectacular work with their pitching. Now, when it comes to the matchups, you have Ian Anderson going against Taijuan Walker in the first game of this series. Big news for the Mets to get Walker back. Wasn't sure if he was going to need a rehab stint. Threw a bullpen, said he's good to go. So that's going to be a big boost. I don't think he'll be full swing 100 pitches. I doubt that. The Mets did not tip their hand with Jacob DeGrom the other night. They said, no pitch count. Then he left the game after 63 pitches. So I don't believe that that was a coincidence. I think he probably had a max of like 75 pitches. And when he got to 63 after five innings, the Mets said, okay, that's enough. I'm sure there's going to be something similar with Walker here. Maybe it is a 75 pitch limit. Who knows? The Mets have decided to give him a go because, quite honestly, what else were they going to do if they brought somebody up from AAA? Doubt that that pitcher would have gone more than two times through the lineup anyway. So now Walker can give you that. And then you're going to have to rely pretty heavily on your bullpen, I would imagine. He will be squaring up against Ian Anderson, who is 4-1 this year with a 2.81 ERA. Has yet to face the Mets. This is a former top prospect who they did see last year. Gave up three runs in less than five innings pitched. But he has been one of the best pitchers in the National League since debuting last year. 2.48 ERA in 15 career starts. Things don't get any easier on Saturday as Max Fried will take the mound. Fried's numbers this year have been inflated because he was pitching through injuries at the start of the season. Has a 4.63 ERA now, but since coming off the injured list, he's allowed exactly one run in each of the four starts that he's made. When he faced the Mets on May 17th, he tied a season high with 8 strikeouts in 6 strong innings pitched. He is a very tough left-hander. He's going up against a lefty in David Peterson, who has a 4.91 ERA on the season. Last time out for Peterson, went 6 innings, allowed 3 runs against the Rockies in the first game of that series. He's going to try to close out this month strong. Has a 4.38 ERA in May. If you were going to ask me throughout his career what Peterson would do month in, month out, I think a low 4 ERA is probably a reasonable expectation. I imagine that he is going to settle in and be about a fourth starter throughout his career. And so you might say, he needs to be better. But honestly, what he's given the Mets is pretty solid. If you're a good offensive team for your fourth starter to be going out and giving you quality starts and pitching to an ERA, 4.38, that's not that bad. So would you love it if he was in the twos like the rest of your rotation? Of course, but he has been pretty solid this month. I do think there's another gear that he gets to where he can be even better. But if he gives the Mets a 4.2 ERA for the rest of the season, I'd probably sign up for that because at least it's not an ERA in the fives, right? So we'll see what he does. This would be a nice opportunity for him to really have a nice final start of the month and roll into the remainder of the season, because now with Syndergaard's injury, as I mentioned earlier, he's even more important to the Mets. Finally, it'll be Charlie Morton versus Jacob deGrom on Sunday. Morton had a rough start to his season, pitched to a 4.76 ERA in five starts in April, but he's really settled down this month, has a 3.04 ERA. That has been tied to him rediscovering that elite curveball that he throws. We saw a lot of that against the Mets a couple starts back, where he pitched six innings, gave up just two hits, one earned run, and had eight strikeouts. So he's going to be tough, but Jacob deGrom should win any matchup. He's the best pitcher on the planet, brings in a 0.80 ERA, a 471 batting average, a 184 WRC plus, was a 74 strikeouts and 44 some odd innings pitched. Best pitcher on the planet, one of the best players on the planet, best player on the Mets. It'll be a joy to watch him go again on Sunday. It'll also be interested to see how many pitches he throws. 63 the last time out. Do the Mets stretch him out to 100 pitches? Probably not, but maybe somewhere in the middle, 85, 90, I would imagine, which for DeGrom can still get you through six or seven innings if he's on his game. It would be great to see the Mets find a way to win another series over the weekend, but if they at least take one game, you settle in with a 4-3 record this week, that would not be bad at all. And because you won both games of the doubleheader, you widen that margin over the Braves. As long as you don't get swept, you will at least still have that lead over them in the division come next week. So we'll see if the Mets can do at least that. Anyway, that's going to be all for today's edition of Locked On Mets. As always, thank you for listening. Make sure you follow, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure you follow me on Twitter at Finkelstein Ryan. Follow the show at Locked On Mets. If you want to get all the sports news you need in under 20 minutes, check out the Locked On Today podcast, hosted by Peter Bukowski. Locked On Today updates you on the latest news in every major sport with the help of our local experts. I'm actually on today's show, so make sure you follow the Locked On Today podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.